Passion, drive, and patience. The formula of winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything for you to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has it covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices that you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP it needs to be and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Again, ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Beach Bod? Manscaped is here to ensure your body is ready for the wild with their game-changing full-body grooming and hygiene product. Don't be the guy at the beach with Austin Powers chest hair. And maybe you've grown some winter man tits. At least you can make them hairless. It's time to get ready for hot guy summer by going to manscaped.com and getting 20% off and free shipping with my promo code Bubba. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you increase your confidence and level up your full-body grooming game with the Performance Package 4.0. The kit comes with the essential lawnmower 4.0 waterproof cordless body trimmer and a ton of other liquid formations to round out your grooming routine. Whether you're trimming your chest or your treasure chest in your pant, doesn't matter. This is the best trimmer on the market. Inside the Performance Package, you're going to find the Manscaped Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver Ball Toner, Anti-Chafing Ball Deodorant, and Moisturizer. Because we all know how painful chafing can be when you're wearing your bathing suit all day. Nobody likes nose hairs. So their package comes with the Weed Whacker 2.0 as well. You're also going to get two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, about a $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxers. And if you're wearing sandals, you're going to need to get the Manscaped Shears 2.0 Nail Kit. Having the right tools for grooming is essential. Do yourself a favor and always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with promo code Bubba at Manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with promo code Bubba at Manscaped.com. Trim your chesticles with the besticles at Manscaped.com. Promo code Bubba.
To all of these men, I want to say that football is not just a game, but a way of life.
You there, Favre?
I'm here.
I think he's done a few of these before. I think he knows how to operate.
Yeah, he knows how to do this shit. He always has the same backdrop, too. You need to have a fancy backdrop, Favre.
I'm still working on that.
So,
Tony, how you doing, man?
Good, brother. How are you?
Good to see you. I'm good. You look good.
I feel good.
He does look good, doesn't he, Brett? He's all swollen up like he can maybe play again, maybe. He couldn't.
I think we both can answer that question with a firm no.
I would be leaving a hamstring at the 5-yard line and a knee at the 10-yard line.
Brett Favre on Tony Mandrich and Mine's Past Packer podcast. So Brett, we do. I had you on my show, you know, maybe about a year ago or so.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Packer fan and, you know, nationally syndicated radio guy. And I'm like, you know what? I saw that 30 for 30 thing about Tony, and it was so transparent and so, like, Tony didn't blame anybody but himself for being a fuck up. And so I was like, I'm going to get that guy on there. And we just kind of started hit it off. And I said, hey, Tony, let's do – I'm pretty familiar with what people are offering in the Packer world. I know who's the center? McCarron. McCarron.
Oh, Larry.
Larry, yeah. Great guy. He was before your time. Poor guy in the crappy teams. Boy, the Packers really sucked back in the 70s and or in the early 80s. And they do –
They sucked when on the end of – until Brett
they sucked until the four got there. It's just that's pretty much how you can ride.
Well, in the end of Mikowski, when Mikowski was there, and then when he got hurt, and when Brett came in, then it took off.
But you got to understand, before Mikowski was, you had Len Dickey, and he had Len Dickey had Andy at Wright. One time
Len was a good player.
Yeah, well, and Len Dickey had James Paul Kaufman, who was a badass tight end. He had John Jefferson and James Lofton at one time.
Not a bad trio.
I mean, just throw that ball up there. One of those guys will get it. Speaking of which, Favre, I know that this is, and I apologize for asking it in advance, but who's your all-time favorite receiver? Now, you know, our first Pass Packer podcast, we had Sterling Sharpe on. We had him on. And, boy, that was a little bit awkward, just to be honest with you.
Well, Sterling can be abrasive. I don't know if that's what you're –
Well, it wasn't – so me and Tony, it's our very first one, and we get them all ready to go and be like, hey, Sterling, this is Bubba and Tony. We're just here to throw you some softballs about being a Packer. No big deal. You know. And he goes, if you're looking for somebody to talk about back in the day stuff and what I did as a player, you're talking to the wrong dude. And me and Tony were just like, oh, shit.
Well, it was more Bubba that was nervous about it than I was, because I know Sterling.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, he can come off, like you said, abrasive or standoffish, but it's like what you see is what you get.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no sugarcoating.
But about 15 minutes or 10 minutes, we had them lathered up, and we were talking about that throw that you made in Detroit. Remember that hail? Not a Hail Mary, but it was broken coverage, I think. And he barely was in bounds when you threw. That was like a 54 yarder or something.
Well, that's probably how far I threw it.
Right. But
it was like 25, 30 yards, touchdown to win the playoff game.
Yeah, we got him talking about that, and we got him talking about a few other things. But going back over to you, Brett, you had some great, great receivers. I could pick who I think your favorite two would be, but I'd rather hear it from you.
You know, I get asked that question probably more than any. And the answer is, I don't have a favorite one. It was like I had different stages of receivers. Sterling was the perfect receiver for me in my first 2 years because I was raw. I didn't understand the offense yet. So I was able to rely on him. Look, Sterling, had he not – first of all, let me just say this. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
It's absolutely atrocity that he's not in.
Whether you like him or not, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
But he was the type of receiver that he wasn't. He never could practice. He had a bad neck, and he had a bad turf toe that he had surgery on. So, but he was, his football IQ was off the charts, and he may have been a 4.6 guy at best, but that was beside the point. You threw it to Sterling. Either he caught it or pass interference or the ball fell incomplete, period.
There was no
wrong throw to Sterling.
He was literally one of those kind of receivers where they use the excuse, if it touches your hand, you got to catch it, like even as his fingertip.
Absolutely. And when he was covered, which a lot of times he was covered because he couldn't outrun anyone, he knew how to position his body, and he had the strongest hands of any receiver I ever played with. But so he would be a favorite, and would have been no telling how many years we would have played together and eclipsed all kinds of records. But he gets hurt. Then I get Robert Brooks, another South Carolina guy.
Yeah.
Robert has a great career. I enjoyed the heck out of it. We have a record together, 99 yard. Against Chicago on Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football at Chicago. Was that at Chicago?
At Chicago.
At Chicago, right. Yep. And that in the old Soldier Field, the old dilapidated.
Yeah, exactly. But then Robert was gone. Then Antonio Freeman steps in. Antonio probably and Donald probably are the longest tenured guys I played with and have the most statistics with. I loved Antonio. Football IQ off the charts. I love Driver. Driver is one of those great stories. Was a track guy at Alcorn, played 1 year of football, was raw, much like myself when I entered the league, but managed to learn the game while playing and had a sensational career. And then fast forward to Minnesota, the best statistical year with a receiver was Sidney Rice. I had 1 year with him. Second year, he was hurt. But he had 15 or 16 touchdowns. He much like Sterling, could not miss. You know, it was a no-brainer throwing it to him. Another South Carolina guy. Some of my favorite receivers were South Carolina guys. Interesting.
So Tony and Sterling were talking about last time we had him on about how different Lindy's offense was from Holmgren's, and that Lindy's was like almost like Swahili, like it was just off the chart, you know. And Tony was saying like sometimes he'd be so he couldn't even figure it out. You go up to the line of scrimmage, have to ask whoever's Verba, whoever's beside you, what the play was.
Well, we'd have to call it down guy, like who's the mic, right? Now it's like who's the mic. We're remember when we play Minnesota? Well, I mean, we only were together 1 year, you and I, but when we would play Minnesota, Dolman was he wore number 56, which would typically designate you as a linebacker, but he was a down lineman.
Right.
So we would always have to designate, you know, who the mic was, so we knew the whole blocking scheme for the O-line and the backs. And then obviously Brett and then whoever, whether it was James Campen or Frank Winters after my time, they would have to be on the same page to agree. Because sometimes there'd be shouting matches on the field being like, no, this guy's Mike. No, this guy's Mike. And, you know, you get quarterback and center arguing on the field about who's Mike. And we're just kind of like, just tell me who Mike is so I know what the blocking scheme is.
Yeah, you know, Holmgren, I obviously was not with Lindy. But when I got to Green Bay and saw the playbook, I thought, what in the hell did I get myself in? Look, at Southern Miss, I started all 4 years and threw for just 4,000 or 5,000 yards in 4 years. I say that because we didn't throw the ball very much. And that was in an era where you didn't throw the ball very much anyway. But we were an option. That's right. We were an option team. We were an I formation team. And when we our base passes were sprint outs, on the move, play action, bootlegs, stuff like that, stuff that I felt comfortable with. So when I get to Green Bay, totally different. West Coast offense, which I'd heard of it, but it was totally unfamiliar with it. There was no shotgun. We didn't do shotgun until 2000, 2002, somewhere in that neighborhood. But it was – the verbiage was unbelievable. And I'll give you an example. Here's one play. Brown left, tight close, Z right, sprint right solid, Z quick drag. Now, I say that easy, and it comes off.
It sounds pretty damn good for you saying it. I'm going to tell you, it sounds pretty damn smart you saying it.
Now, when you learn it for the first time, there's most of our plays were long verbiage. And I remember Ty Detmer one time in the quarterback room saying, do we really need 16 words for one play? And no, I totally agree. No, so but the thing about Holmgren and the West Coast offense, just in regards to the play and play calls and stuff, the names meant the route or the scheme. So for example, Texas told everyone what to do from a receiver and a back standpoint. The numbers were the protection. So 22 Texas, 22 was everything to the lineman and the blocking back, and obviously the quarterback. Two jet flanker drive, X shallow cross.
Look at old Favre just blurt these right on out like it was yesterday.
Well, I played 18 years in the same offense, 16 with Green Bay and 2 in Minnesota. So
you finally got it down.
Right when my career was over.
So, Brett, what was the one play that was like, you know, third and four? You know, you're big for the longest time. I think it was either Ken Rutgers and Earl Dotson, or it was Clifton and Trauscher were kind of your guys most of your career, I think. And you know, you needed four. You needed four. You know what does Brett Favre like?
Fox 2 X and Y hook was the play that I obviously I've never researched it, but the play that I ran the most in the West Coast offense, if I had to guess, would be green right, which is I right. Fox 2 X and Y hook. You fake a draw. Chimura, Keith Jackson, Ed West,
Bubba Franks.
Any one of those guys would run an 8 to 12 yard hook. That was your number one read. Then you go to, if that's covered, you go backside to the X on a hook as well to the fullback on a little he runs through like he's blocking the mic, and then he bursts out to the weak side to the left. So you had a Y, X to the fullback. And if it was some type of blitz or quarters coverage where the safeties are flat, you had an outside post with a Z to the strong side, so to the side of the tight end. You had a skinny post or a go route, depending on coverage. That was the play, if I had to bet, that's the play we ran the most and I had the most success with.
I probably know the answer to this one, but your favorite center, I would say probably your boy Frankie Winters, but a lot of people don't know that you played with, I think Wells was a center for you for a couple years.
Scotty Wells, Mike Flanagan.
Campy was your first year, wasn't he?
Campy was my first center. And let me tell you, I loved all of them. The guy that I played the most with and had the strongest relationship with was Frank Winters, obviously. We were roommates. We came in together. Now, he was several years older, but we hit it off. And I enjoyed all my centers. Campy was a piece of work now. I mean,
that's what Tony said. Tony says that Campy was just a piece of work. Everybody loved Campy, but he was always pulling some kind of rib or some kind of bullshit going on with Campy.
Yeah, and I don't even know if he's coaching still.
Yeah, he is. He's in Carolina.
What I'd tell you, hell of a coach, too.
Coach at offensive line at Carolina.
They got their hands full, Carolina. But he's a hell of a guy, hell of a coach, and was a heck of a player.
And Flanagan, he played center for, I think, a year or so, didn't he?
Longer than that. Flanagan was a hell of a guy and a hell of a center, considering that he had a terrible break in his leg. My memory serves me well, the first preseason game of his first year, they had him on kickoff return setting a wedge, and a guy went low and hit him in the leg and had a terrible break. And he, to come back from that was nothing short of a miracle.
Tony, were you ever in the huddle and Favre lit up some ass, like somebody missed assignment or and Favre got up on you guys? Did he ever get on you guys?
No, I never did that.
Never did?
No. I was never that type of player.
Brett, one of the things I found interesting, and I didn't even realize this because I wouldn't pay attention to this. When we were talking to Sterling, he talked about all the quarterbacks that he had played with. Mm-hmm. He said, and in, I guess, Mike's system, or was it Lindy's system he was talking about, that rarely would the quarterback, because the quarterback had so much information to take in once the series was over, from the head coach to the coordinator to the quarterback coach, that he rarely ever talked to, he said, would the quarterback and him come together and talk about, hey, look, next time we go out there, this, or this guy's playing me soft or whatever, which really surprised me, because usually you see a lot of quarterbacks and receivers talking on the sideline. Did you notice that, or was that something that you remember?
Yeah, well, we didn't talk a lot. Once I became starter, if there was any talking between the two, it would be initiated by Sterling, and I'll explain why. I was not in a position to, even though I was a quarterback, to give many directions, because I was learning myself. Great. It was hard for me. It would be ridiculous for me to say, well, I need you to do this on this route.
Right.
Because I was still learning the offense. Now, what Sterling would say more than once, probably thousands of times, is if you want to have success, throw this damn ball to me. And that resonated with me, because every time I threw it to him, I think he caught 108 balls and 115 balls back to back, something like that, broke his own record. The first touchdown I threw against Cincinnati was he was a third read. I think it was like a 3-yard touchdown pass. And if you went back and looked at it, there was about four guys draped on him, and he stuck his butt out. He was like right on the one, and he stuck his butt out, and they were reaching around like this, and he just snagged it with his hands and bulldozed in for the touchdown.
He was strong, Zach.
He was super strong. Yeah. He never slipped. The worse the conditions, the better he was. Just an amazing player and extremely, extremely bright on and off the field. And wanted you to know that as well.
I told him.
He wasn't humble about it.
I heard a story, and I forget where I heard it, but I asked Sterling this too. And he thought, I don't know if he said he remembered it, but remember, Tony, where it might have been a game or practice, and I think Sterling might have held out that camp or something like that. And he wasn't in camp for very long, but he was in camp a little bit. And I think Brett either overthrew him or something like that and came back to the huddle. And again, this is a story that's been told, so it's probably not even correct. And I guess Brett said, you know, come on, Sterling, you should have had it or something like that. And he said something back at you, and you said if you would have been at practice with the rest of us, you would have caught it. Did you remember that story, Brett?
There's probably some truth to that.
Were you kind of lit him up and said, well, had you been at practice, training camp, you would have caught that ball. It's not my fault.
There's probably some truth to that, and I was probably put in my place really quick. You know, Sterling had that. It was obvious he had a neck injury because he had a chin strap from his shoulder pass to the back of his helmet. The only player I've ever seen have that. So I'm assuming it was there to keep his head from going forward too much.
That's what he said. Yeah.
That ultimately is what ended his career. But his turf toe was, I think he'd had surgery prior to me getting there and was not able to practice. And I say that because the success he had, considering the no practice, I'm just guessing, he probably practiced five times with when I was there.
That's it, and, five times, period.
And I may be up to.
Might be up to, you said.
So for someone to not practice at all, to play and have success the way he did is nothing short of amazing.
You know, the average fan doesn't know what turf toe really is. And he's a really, really, really good friend of mine. In fact, Tony and I are thinking about going and seeing him. Deion Sanders is him and I are really, 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 really close friends. And he showed me his turf toe before he got it most recently. Damn near amputated. Yeah. But boy, I don't think people realize how bad of an injury that, you know, it didn't sound like much, turf toe, but man, that is bad, horrible.
Especially for a receiver.
Yeah.
Probably more so than a DB, but because the receiver has to like really push off of it, make the breaks, come out of breaks really sharp and put a lot of force on it.
And I would say you probably rarely come out of it at 100% unless it's an off season.
Right.
I mean, you know, you're going to try to get back on the field when it's a lot better than it was, but it's still going to constantly keep getting re-injured.
Brett Favre on the Pass Packers podcast, our second one. Boy, I got to tell you, Tony, we're kicking ass. We got, I mean, two of the all-time greats, one and two, Sterling and Brett Favre. So, Brett, I was going through some of your tackles and stuff like that, and I always wanted to know what happened to this guy. I know they drafted him out of USC. He was a big kid, 6'7", 300, John Michaels, and he started as a rookie and then was gone. Like, what happened with him?
Well, he was around for, I don't remember the years, but he was around longer than a year.
Right.
John was, he looked the part, was just an extremely nice guy, very bright. In fact, when you talk to him, if you were to talk to him on the phone, the last thing you would peg him as is a football player. that makes sense. You know, you would think he's running a Fortune 500 company or something like that.
Real bright.
Nothing against him. But pro football was not his thing. It didn't work out for him. Again, he looked the part, but I thought a lot of him. But it happens often. You know, a guy comes in first round pick,
We're looking at one of the guys, right? I mean, we're looking at one guy right now. I mean, that's one thing that Tony doesn't hide. He's like, hey, I was a fuck up in my first 3 or 4 years. I was a real.
But he's not by himself. I mean, there's probably way more first round picks who, for whatever reason, didn't live up to the expectations than there are guys like Tom Brady or Kurt Warner. Those probably are more prominent than, you know, you hear stories about a guy that's undrafted or Brock Purdy. You know, it's kind of a 50-50. First round picks, sometimes they pan out, sometimes they don't. But oftentimes it's a guy you go, hell, we picked this guy last in the draft. And look at him. He's won 16 straight games as a quarterback. That's more of the norm than first round picks panning out.
A lot of people don't remember that. I think Green Bay, I think Kurt Warner played a year or two under you, didn't he, Brett?
No, he was in the training camp.
Training camp.
He had just had a really good year in the Arena League, and that got him a shot in training camp with us. But he didn't have any reps. I mean, it was hard to say. I mean, you know, I've been asked so many times, did you see that in Kurt Warner, that Hall of Fame? No, I didn't. I'm not saying that with any disrespect. I mean, how could I see that when you don't take any reps?
Right, right. A lot of people don't know that you played that Jim McMahon's last couple of years with the Packers. A lot of people don't know that. Let me tell you,
when it comes to football IQ, and I played 20 years, there was no one like Jim McMahon.
Really?
Wow.
His football IQ was off the charts. It was unbelievable.
So in 1996, because I was good, I met Dion in 94, 95, and he comes to Tampa and is on my show and stuff and sees that I'm a Packer fan. We remain friends. He wanted me to play his rap album when I was on a rap station, so I did and everything. And so the Packers, you guys played, Green Bay played the Dallas for the NFC Championship. No, for the NFC Divisional game, I think. Was it the championship or the divisional game in 96?
Probably was championship. I think we played four times there in a row, and one was a divisional.
So he
gets
me tickets. He goes, just stay with Sponge. Just stay with me. I said, okay, I'll stay with you. I'll, you know, whatever. So, but he knows that he knows I'm a great Sponge. So he knows I'm a Packer fan. So I got these tickets for me to go anywhere I want to go. Except your guys' locker room, but I can go in Dallas's locker room and I can. So for the entire first half of the game, I'm over on your guys' side of the field. I'm like, oh, my God, there's Chris Jackie, and there's Reggie White, and there's Brett Favre. Man, and I had one of those. It was so back in the day, I had one of those kind of cameras that was in a box, and then you just took down to Walgreens, and they would develop them for you. So come halftime, I'm in Dallas's, and it's a really close game. I think we're up 24-21, or it's a close game. It's 96. It's a 96 playoff game in Dallas. And I go up to Dion, and he says, Sponge, where you been all game? I'm like, I've been over at the Packers side of the thing. I saw Brett Favre, and I saw Jim McMahon, and everything's like, don't forget who brought you to the ball game. And so I couldn't go back over to the Packers side. The rest, I had to stay over there on the Dallas side because he was so mad at me.
Yeah, you better dance with the one who brung you.
Right.
Yeah, so. and he attributes, if you remember that game, Brett, it was it might have been our defensive coordinator, but there was a sideline, a play that happened.
No, it was Gil Haskell. It was our receiver coach. Gil got ran over and almost died.
Yeah, and Dion told me that it was that 10 or 12 minutes of them, you know, taking care of him and getting an ambulance and stuff like that, that they were able to kind of redo their defense on us, adjust their
momentum,
defense.
The momentum shifted big time.
Right.
I mean, we're thinking Gil may die.
Right.
I threw a pass, a little out route. It was a sprint. I'll never forget the play. Sprint right option. It's in Dallas for quite a while. I think Gil's doing much better. After maybe a year, he was doing a lot better.
Right.
Gil's getting up there in age now, but
I mean, even though I wasn't there with the Packers at that time, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, I mean, that was a seriously, night. He almost died.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was there, too. I got in trouble for being on the Packers sideline, but I was there. So Brett, what do you think about, and I know I'm not going to make this too current Packer-ish, but, you know, a lot of people are getting on Love, and a lot of people are, you know, down on the Packers right now. And if you fundamentally look at Love, it looks like he's got, you know, the tools. It looks like he's got the athleticism. I mean, he's got guys draped all over him with Bakhtiara being out and having a makeshift line. But I don't think, I mean, they're the youngest team in the NFL. I think Love can end up being something. I really do.
I do too. I do too. I think the fact that they're young, I think the fact that the expectations on Love are unfair.
Right.
And almost unreachable, especially at this point. You know, Packer fans have gotten spoiled and expect the same thing that happened in previous years.
Well, I mean, think about it. For 30 years, the Packers have had a Hall of Fame quarterback back to back. And I don't know of any other franchise. I mean, maybe Kansas City when Joe left. I mean, maybe San Fran when Joe went and Young took over. But I still think that wasn't near the length of you and Aaron, I don't think.
No, it wasn't near the length. But that's the closest comparison.
Right.
But you know, Jordan, he looks good to me. He's accurate. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of poise. They're just young. I mean, yeah. they're going to win a few games that they probably shouldn't have won. They're going to lose a bunch of games that they probably should have won. And
you know, the Bakhtiara thing is really, you know, I mean, as far as cap sensitive as the league is, you know, and you got a guy that you're paying that much. And I'm not saying anything bad about him. I'm just saying that just really as a general manager, as a head coach, you've lost your, you know, your strong side tackle. And now I think that even the second place guy is hurt. So they're on their third string tackle. And I mean, I'm not gonna say you're not gonna win any ball games, but you certainly are certainly at a disadvantage when you got your third string tackle in there.
Without question. And the other pieces, on the offense again are young. They're going to make young mistakes. It is what it is. I mean, when you watch them, you see flashes of what they can be. And to me, that's what you got to hang your hat on.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know any of the guys other than their names. And I think that they have a lot of potential, but I wouldn't expect that to materialize really quickly.
So Brett, why not? Because you're as famous, you're as knowledgeable, you're as well liked. You know, you come across kind of like a John Madden, well likable, you know, kind of guy. Why didn't you ever get into, you know, like what Romo did, what Aikman did, you know, what Tom Brady is going to do? Did you ever get the big offers when you were just first retiring?
No, I didn't. I really didn't inquire. ESPN kind of reached out and we talked about it, but I'll be honest with you. At that time, I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but at that time, the last thing I remember talking to Gruden and I asked him about it and he says, I love it. And he was great at it.
Right.
He was absolutely great. But he said, I'm just wanting, before you make any commitments, I just want you to know if you thought travel was bad while you were playing.
Man. Oh yeah, because they got to get into town like what two, 3 days before start well, asking all you guys
he
questions.
He used the example, and I never even thought about it until he told me. He said, "Look, say I'm doing a game Monday night in Seattle. I'll leave probably Friday, maybe Thursday, and get back Tuesday afternoon." And I was like, "Yeah,
that's a little tough.
That's like playing again."
It's like playing again. Yeah. And he said, if you want to be good at it, you got to prepare. You got to study, which I totally get. You don't want to go blind into national TV and say the wrong guy or the wrong coverage. So you have to study. You have to prepare. And at that point, I'd been doing that for 20 years, grinding. I was like,
I need a break.
I need a break.
Yeah. You need, yeah. I think there's rumor it has it that you like to go out and run your own weed whacker and do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we got 465 acres. You know, like Frank Winter said one time, he goes, "Dude, do you have to have that many acres?" The answer to that question is no. It just happened that we found a piece of property we like, we bought it, and I'll be honest. At times, it can be overwhelming. Things to do, stuff breaking down. Irrigation's not working when you're in a drought. Air conditioning goes out when it's the hottest part of the summer. But for the most part, I enjoy doodling and fixing things and
getting on your tractor.
Yeah, getting on the tractor, disking fields, planting food plots, pruning trees, spraying weeds. I mean,
you're just Brett Favre shit.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. To me, normal stuff.
That's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, you're not like stuck on your or glued to your phone, you know, like right. So many people are. It's like,
in fact, I was outside right before I came running in.
I can tell you need some sunscreen, buddy. You're getting a little red up there, bud.
Well, we're in the worst drought maybe ever for this area. We've had one light drizzle since July 17th.
Wow.
And so do you grow anything in particular, Brett, or are you as far as farming?
I try to I'm not no arborist or landscape architect, but like I'll plant trees and different oak trees and try to take inferior trees out, you know, invasive
species.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I try to dabble and doodle and do stuff like that. But
you have a tree spade for the tractor?
No, I thought about buying one.
Right.
But it's one of those things that it would sit there 99% of the time.
Right.
And it would probably get used more by people because when you got stuff, people
borrow stuff. Right. Family borrows shit, then they don't return it as good as they got, or they give it to you half empty or whatever the hell, right?
I think with the first one you said, yeah. They don't return it.
They just, it's like a rental car. If you got a rental car.
It's like college when you borrowed one of your roommate's shirts and you kept it for about a week. You liked it, and after a while you hid it from me. And then it was yours after a while.
Here's a trick question probably nobody ever asked. Who was your predominant roommate when you still root, like probably freshman, sophomore, you probably lived on campus and then maybe off campus there later. Who was your roommate?
Chris Riles. He was my left tackle. We're still friends today. We live not too far apart. We were actually roommates for 4 years. That was that in an era where you were in a dorm the whole time. And you had curfew. Now guys don't even live in a dorm.
No.
With, you know, and no curfew.
That's
not
crazy.
Not the curfew is important.
Can you imagine the amount of money you two collectively, because Tony, coming out of college, you were the big slinging D. I mean, you were the guy. And Brett Glanville thought you were the guy, I guess, but I mean, Ron Wolf knew you were the guy and went and got you. But can you imagine if the NIL would have been around when you guys played? I mean, on the caliber that you played it, you guys would have been seven figure NILs, I think.
Well, Tony would have broke the bank.
Well, yeah,
this was at, you know, and I'm not saying anything that you and Tony don't know or our listeners don't know, but Tony was the biggest thing in college football.
Oh, I know.
This was in an era where there wasn't social media. You didn't have all the channels. Now you have instantaneous news. I mean, you can read about every player in a second on your phone. This was in an era where that wasn't the case. So if you were not in front of a TV or you were not in front of a TV that had cable, you didn't know about Tony. But everyone knew about Tony.
Oh yeah, it was on the cover of Sports Illustrated called The Incredible Bulk with like some 50 or 60 pound dumbbells after he just
SI was the really like the leading sports authority as far as print goes. And then, you know, ESPN was in their early years, probably online for sports, the leading authority. So yeah. if those are your two only really big sources that people go to, I mean, it's and then they start pushing you. It's like it's you can get pretty big, pretty branded, like at a large scale. Now it's like by the after, if you're a story in the morning, by the afternoon, you're almost old news.
Yeah. You're right.
It's
great. They are off to the next story.
When I had Tony on the very first time, a couple times ago, Tony was like, he just kind of master manipulated the press a little bit, kind of knew what they would eat up, specifically trained for the combine, had an unbelievable. What did you run, Tony? A 4.65?
Yeah, 4.64, 4.65.
Jeez,
at 3:30, 3:40?
3:08.
3:08. Okay, down a little bit. And did but, how many? Like I mean, a thousand times at 225? Like, didn't you do like 42?
No, it was 980.
Well, it was 950.
But wasn't it like 42 or something? Something
39.
Like 39. Oh, I'm sorry.
There's people today that go, yeah, you know, like you ran the fastest 40, you broke the bench press record. I go, I was like 16 reps off the bench press record for the combine.
Now, Brett, how good of a combine did you have?
I wasn't able to participate in most of it because a month or two before, my last college football game was the East-West Shrine Game out at Stanford. And I got probably the worst football injury of my career that game. I had a guy fall on me and jam my hip and was diagnosed with a vascular necrosis, believe it or not.
Kind of like that's Bo Jackson injury?
Yeah. And it bothered me on and off my whole career. And I had my hip replaced in January. Finally, it finally gave out.
Oh, this past
feel
January.
Better?
Yeah, feels a lot better. I had it January. You know, I was failed on my Green Bay physical. I was failed prior to the draft by several teams because I had to go through all kinds of tests. And the consensus was with the people who said the people who failed me was that I wouldn't play 3 years with that hit. Well, I ended up playing 20. But it did give out.
Some pretty good years.
Yeah.
You had some pretty decent years, Favre. I mean, you did okay.
Actually, a couple pretty good decades.
Yeah. I mean, I think how many times did you throw for 4,000? I forget, 10?
You know, what's interesting about my career is I threw for a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns, but I didn't throw for a lot of yards in games or a lot of touchdowns. I know it doesn't make sense. But guys, even during my era, guys threw for 400 yards, and in some cases, 500 yards. 300 was a given with most quarterbacks. Yeah. I could probably count on one finger the times I threw for 400 yards. Seriously.
Might have been the time in Oakland, maybe after your dad, but what was it, one? That was the most incredible game, Favre, I think I've ever seen any quarterback ever play. You were just in a different – just a whole different league.
Well, you know, I appreciate that.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get when you're talking through Mint Mobile. I mean, I can't believe that I've been living some other life with all this scratchy mobile when I can get crystal clear and the best mobile through Mint Mobile. And I can do it all for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. I can afford this. How much have I been paying on my other plan? Probably getting gouged. But it's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan. I mean, I'm talking jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. Say goodbye to all that nonsense. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Bubba. That's mintmobile.com/BUBBA. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Bubba. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And I'm well aware of the fact that probably the best game I ever played in my career was just happened to be after my father passed away.
Big Irv.
But that's the way I wanted it. I didn't, obviously, the circumstances I wish were a lot different. But the pressure on that game, on me, the self-induced pressure, was by far worse than any game, including the Super Bowl, including the return of the Packers when I was with Minnesota. None could compare to the pressure that I felt that I was under to honor my father and play at a, I mean, just the fact that I played, I knew that he would want me to play, and there was no question that he would have kicked me in the ass had I not played.
Oh, if you would have been Crybaby Willie, Irv, he would have just absolutely tore you. Get your ass in that ball game, and don't worry about me.
He would have haunted me forever.
He would have haunted. You would have thrown four picks. If you would have, the next game when you got done, you would have thrown four picks, couple pick sixes, come that kind of nonsense. Yeah. Dion told me to ask you about the pick six that he got on you in Lambeau.
Which one?
The one in, I think it was might have been the was real cold and he ran.
Yeah, there was one in Green Bay. We actually beat the stuffing out of Dallas. That was probably, I think, my only win against Dallas. But go figure. I mean, I think we beat him like 40-something.
Oh, you did. It was like 40.
14.
To like, yeah. Anyway, Dion has invited.
But Dion doesn't care about that.
Oh, no, he didn't remember about any of that. And he doesn't remember about, like, he prides himself on not being a tackler. Like he said, if once they get to him, it's he's done tackling, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he contact, no.
I can remember a couple times Edgar Bennett coming right at him, and Dion would just, you know, kind of cocoon up a little bit.
Well, Dion and I were together in Atlanta, and we're still dear friends today. And we always laugh about my year in Atlanta, but also Dion just being Dion. So, like, maybe during a TV timeout or something, I'd walk over and say, "Why didn't you make that tackle?" He called me country.
Right, country time.
He said, "Country, they don't pay me to tackle."
So he's invited Tony and I to come out.
Y'all should go.
I'm trying to get Tony talk into. We're all taken care of and everything. And boy, they lost.
Y'all were in the same draft, Tony, right?
Yeah.
Tony was second.
I was drafted around four Hall of Famers.
Yeah. Listen to this. Number one in '89 was Aikman. Number two was Tony. Three was
Barry.
Barry Sanders. Four. Wow. Four was Dion, and five.
Four was Derek.
Derek
Thomas.
And then Dion was
five
fifth.
Five was Dion.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Tony got what, $4.4 million total, yeah. Tony?
Over four.
And then
years
he got ago. In trouble because he called Green Bay a village. He got in trouble and got the people in Green Bay so mad at him because he called him a village.
They had sold newspapers.
He goes, I know where fucking Green Bay is. Is it a village?
Well, you know what? I made up for it like a month later because I said every village needs a village idiot.
Yeah, that's true. Brett Favre on our Past Packers podcast with Tony Mandritz and myself. Brett, I gotta thank you so much for spending some time with us, and I know you got a lot going on and stuff like that. Are you doing any more of that concussion stuff? Because we talked to your doctor a little bit. Are you getting back on that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I'd love to talk about my legal issue.
Yeah, I would too, because you got to understand, Brett, I have been sued 3 times for defamation of character because I'm, you know, a shock jock and say a bunch of shit. And I'm 3-0. I've never lost.
And I got 2 defamations pending right now. We're waiting on the judge that we have sued. And we're waiting on a judge to either throw it out or grant a
hearing.
And then the civil lawsuit that the state has filed, which is
much of bullshit. All of it's bullshit.
Yeah, absurd. But you know, until I get out of it, I can't talk about it.
Yeah, and I'm not trying
to issue a gag order.
I'm not trying to take you down that road either, but my friend,
I'd love to go down that road and explain my side.
Well, when you can, let me and Tony have the scoop on the deal.
We can do that.
They only want, I mean, you know, I can't say per specific, but in general, it seems like if somebody wants a narrative out there, the media will make that narrative happen, and they don't care if it's real or if it's fake or what it is.
You're absolutely right. The stuff that's been said about me.
Oh, I've heard some of it. It's been horrible.
I can't defend myself.
Right.
You know, you would think that, you know, I'm the worst thing since whatever. I mean,
I don't think that the masses think that.
Brett, I don't think you understand that really the regular working guy out there that reads the paper and can form his own opinion, I think they can see this railroad bullshit for what it is. I really do. I mean,
I hope so. I hope so. And you know, again, it's a civil suit. So they're.
It's just a bunch of bullshit's what it is, and I can't wait for one of these days for you to have some closure on it and be able to talk about it. But
my attorney Eric Hirschman is actually in Israel. He lives in Israel and Austin, Texas. So I hope
he's okay.
I'm hoping he can get out.
Yeah,
right.
That's a real
I reached out to him. He said he's safe, but. Yeah, total chaos over there, as you'd expect.
Yeah, so, I mean, just a total shitstorm over there. I mean,
so, you know, he's not able to. There's nothing going on with the case right now. I've learned the legal system is like 2 snails racing.
The legal system's slower than John Jerkovic's 40 time. Although I loved him and Robert Brown, man. I loved those 2 dudes. They were great.
Because I remember John Jerkovic, and if you looked at him and looked at his body,
he wouldn't be a football player.
You would be like, there's no way that guy, like, he has no business being on the field.
Absolutely.
And if you watch him play, you're like, holy smokes, this guy can play.
I tell people that all the time. You know, looking the part and playing the part, don't always.
Agreed.
Hey, I saw a guy in 2005. He was he was listed as the starting running back. He was a rook, and he was named Sam Con Gatto or Gato or something. I'd never heard of that guy, Brett.
No one did.
I mean, like, was he good? He was from Liberty.
Yeah, he was good.
Well, I never saw him pass that.
Yeah, he was good. I don't think he had a long career, but man, he was like shot out of a cannon when he got an open field.
In your last year, 07, I think there were both the rookie running backs. Both starters were rookies in 07, your last year.
Yeah, you know, and ironically, my best year statistically was that last year.
I know you were 13-3, right?
I had like 33 touchdowns and 9 picks or something.
Yeah, 4,000, like 4,155 yards, something like that. And
I made it. You know what happened with that is that I made it tougher for the Packers management to part ways with me, if that makes sense. Had I had a bad year, it would have been easy to say, we'll trade you. If you want to play, we'll trade you. We'll just cut you. But when I had a really good year, we lost the championship game. I knew that they wanted to go in a different direction with Aaron, and I was okay with it. I mean, it is what it is. I wasn't so sure I wanted to play at the end of that year. I was devastated by the loss.
Right.
But, yeah, so.
But didn't they handle it kind of, I heard, and I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus. Nobody's there that was there when you were there. But somebody, I think maybe even heard it from you, or they kind of like, it was disrespectful on how they handled you. And like one day you went to go there and your key card just didn't work. Like they didn't even really tell you that. Like,
yes. But I think both sides had we got a chance to do it over again, we would do it different. I think I'll be honest with you. I think it opened the door and cleared up a way for future instances to do it the right way.
Might have maybe paid the path.
Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
You know, for example.
Right.
They mutually now had my situation out work the way it did and worked out in a more civil way. Would I have ended up with the Jets? I don't know. But you know, both sides were at fault. I'm not going to blame them. Of course, I feel like that there are some things they could have done different. I didn't know I was going to play. That was the bottom line. I didn't know I was under contract. And honestly, I was not obligated to say to them or to anyone, I'm going to play or I'm not going to play until the day one of training camp. That's the truth. So, I was pressured for an answer, and in March, I honestly say I was committed to coming back to the team? No. There was a lot of factors but it's like I always use the example, and I think people can relate to this. Think back to grade school, your 12 years of grade school, and you get out of school middle of May, 1st of June, somewhere like that. You start back somewhere in August or after Labor Day. So come March or April, you're kind of chomping at the bits for the summer to get there.
You're ready to get the hell out of there.
Then, a week or two before the school season starts again, you kind of get the itch to go back. I mean, summer's run its course. You're kind of ready to get back. New classes, new
chicks. Don't forget the chicks. We're kind of good with the chicks. Yeah. Might be some new girls moved in.
Well, if you play sports, you're looking forward to the sports kicking back up again.
Yeah.
Well, pro football is the same way. You have an off season. That's the summer break. As soon as the season's over, you can't wait to get home. Go do whatever it is you choose to do. As the season gets closer and closer, you kind of get that itch. Like, I'm ready to play. Yeah. That was the case with me. And so when I made a commitment to not play or said I was not going to play, I was in that phase where the season had just finished.
And you were over it probably. I'm over it.
It was a devastating loss. The last thing I wanted to think about was the upcoming season. So – but it is what it is.
Hey, so oddly enough, I think Tony, you blocked for Peyton, did you not? Brett brought up Peyton, didn't you?
Yeah, Harbaugh. When I went to Indy, Harbaugh was there my first year, and then they drafted Peyton. Then Peyton was there my second and third year. We actually played you guys. I think, you guys were 10-0 coming into Indy.
Yeah, y'all beat us.
Yeah, we were like 1-6.
They got that damn RCA.
It was a high score. It was like 41-38 or something, but we're talking after the game, but it was just crazy because we were just tearing up the league. It was awesome. But let me ask you this, because I've always been curious about this, because this guy is a guy that I respect a lot, and I always felt was the total package, and I got to play against him 3 times. But what was, and everybody knows what kind of a player he was, what was Reggie White like as a teammate?
Oh, he was unbelievable. Greatest guy. Greatest guy. He was a larger than life figure on and off the field. I think and so respected by players, and non-players, enemies, rivals. Everybody respected the heck out of him. First of all, Reggie never gave a reason for anyone to hate him. Maybe you hated playing against him, but you didn't hate him as a guy. When he came to Green Bay, of course I knew about Reggie, played against him, knew what kind of player he was.
Got sacked by him a few times.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I was my before he joined us in the locker room, where he was part of the family, I have to admit, I was really intimidated and unsure of how do I talk to Reggie? How do I approach him? Is he going to be, nice? Is he going to be approachable? All these things went through my mind. I'm sure other players maybe had the same feelings. But right away, he came in. He started doing imitations of Bill Cosby and who else? He did imitations of all kinds of guys. Howard Cosell. And he was good. And he was one of those guys, and I tell this, he never would tell a dirty joke, but he would laugh at one.
Right. And
he was the biggest kid to be so imposing. Yeah. You know, after a while, I had to pinch myself as games were played and we moved on to the next game. I would have to pinch myself and say, that's the same guy who was doing the imitations in the locker room. Right.
I'm good. I'm
throwing tackles around.
I'm good friends with a guy named Ty J. Armstrong. He played tight end for the Bucks down here and predominantly a blocking tight end. And then I think eventually Bubba Franks ended up down here, didn't he, in Tampa? I think.
Yeah, I don't remember where he ended up.
But anyway, I think that's who Ty J may have got replaced by. But Ty J is, starting tight end, and it's a play kind of going opposite direction. I think Reggie's on the left side. And so Ty J said, I got a pretty good block on him, but Reggie would be known to take a playoff or two if he knew it might have been run opposite side, so this is what it was. So Ty J got a real good block on him. He said he got a pretty good block on him. And Ty J started cussing and saying all that, saying, you ain't shit, Reggie. I got you, buddy. 92 ain't nothing. And he said all Reggie did would look at him at, God bless you, 89. God bless you. And then he went and put the hump move on him three times in a row. Ty J got pulled out for looking like an idiot. And he said the worst thing that he ever did was to ever talk any smack to Reggie, because he would bless you first and then would go amongst just to making you look stupid.
Well, I'll tell you one of my favorite Reggie stories, and it's very similar to what you said. We were in practice, training camp, first week of practice, in pads. I think it was Hasselbeck who was the quarterback and second or third offense. And Reggie, you didn't want Reggie to go full steam in practice. I mean, you want to get something accomplished. You knew it, So Reggie has his shoulder pads unbuckled. He's got a jersey on, practice jersey. He's over there. He's lined up on the right tackle. And it happened to be John Yurkovich's brother, who we just drafted in the second round, Mirko Yurkovich, who looked the part. And you had to know Mirko and John. I mean, they were like they were from New York. I don't know if they were from South Side of Chicago, but hey, hey, F you.
Right.
Mirko is fresh out of Notre Dame, high draft pick. And we run a play, and I'm standing back there in the back and watching, and Mirko grabs Reggie and throws him down.
Ooh.
And Reggie gets up, and Reggie says, hey, Mirko, don't be holding me. Mirko says, hey, F you, Reggie. And I went, oh, boy. Reggie doesn't say a word. But I was telling everybody back there with me, I said, look out. So the funny thing about the story, you had to be there to see it. All of a sudden, I see Reggie buckle his shoulder pad. That was the
ignition.
The signal.
I mean, Mirko's in the huddle. He doesn't see it.
Right.
So the next play, he just clobbers Mirko and knocks down several other linemen. Just chaos. Mirko gets up, and Reggie says, "Now remember, Mirko, God loves you. And don't ever hold me again." I thought, now this is larger than life figure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what a great guy. You know what? Oddly enough, Brett, I have, when Tony Dungy coached for the Bucks, you know how if you make the Pro Bowl squad, at least back in the day, they would pick the NFC, like one of the NFC championship coaches to be coaching staff for the NFC Pro Bowl. And
the losing team.
Yeah, the losing team. So Tony Dungy was the head coach for Reggie's last Pro Bowl. Well, he brought his staff, which, you know, his equipment managers and stuff like that from Tampa, which I all knew, and they all knew I was Packer fans. So I actually have a pair of Reggie's, the last pants that he ever wore as a football player was the 2000 and Pro Bowl pants. And I got him, Dion got him signed for me, but I have his 2000 Pro Bowl NFC pants. I have them, and I really am thinking about maybe getting a hold of his wife. You probably couldn't put a price on them. And secondly, I wouldn't want to sell them, but I bet you his wife would like to, I'd like to give them to her.
His two kids, Jeremy or Jacoby.
Yeah. I mean, cause they're literally the last pair of game worn pants is their father ever wore. I'd love to give them to him, you know?
Yeah. I don't know how to get in touch with him, but I think that would be a nice gesture.
And he signed it, Reggie White, Corinthians 113. Dion saw him at Derek Brooks's golf tournament down here, and Dion was staying with me. I'm like, Dion, can you? I know you're not a fanboy or nothing, but can you get D signed? It's like, Sponge, now you got me having people sign stuff. Come on. But listen, I speak on behalf of Tony, and we were contemplating if we could ever get you. And I told Tony that I had you on once before. And you're working out some stuff, and that you know that I'm friend, not foe, and you probably do the show, and I appreciate you doing that for us. Yeah. But
well, I was looking forward to it, especially with Tony. I had seen or talked to Tony in a long time.
Look how good he looks. I mean, he looks great. He looks a little old, but great. He looks pretty damn good, right?
A little. I look still, real old.
Still hitting it in the weight room, aren't you, Tony?
I'm still hitting. I'm afraid to stop moving.
Yeah, I agree. I had back surgery in May.
I thought you had hip and back.
Yeah, and my back still giving me issues. I never had back issues when I played.
No. Right.
And up until 2 years ago, I didn't have any issue.
Right.
I was running half marathons. I was biking 100 miles. I mean, just feeling like
great.
A million bucks. Yeah. And then the rails came off, man.
You got to wear that copper stuff that you promote.
Well, they suspended the relationship until.
Oh God, whatever. This is when I'd be doubling down on my Favre dollar if I was an advertiser. I'd be like, you know what? Let's double down on our Favre
dollar. CEO is a really good guy, and he said, you know, we're just going to take a pause. And I'm like, the people who are bitching and complaining don't buy a copper fit.
No, no. Right. Guys like me, average dude, you know, has got a tweaked out knee, and I'm going to, hey, oh my God, Brett Favre and God, that was the guy from San Fran, Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
Those two dudes, they're good enough for me.
Pretty good players.
Yeah, pretty good players. Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story about Calvin Fitt. I had a long, good relationship with him, and the stuff does work to a point. And I'll give you an example. So I'm hitting golf balls one day out at the local golf course on the range, and a guy comes up. I knew him, couldn't remember his name, and he says, "Hey, just like you, hey Favre, does that copper fit stuff really work?" And I said, "What's the issue?" He said, "Well, I got an ACL and an MCL tear." I'm like, "Go do see a damn doctor and have surgery. It's not going to help that. So it'll help, you know." Typical aches and pains, tendonitis, stuff like that. But
it's not going to do widespread surgery like that guy.
I got three herniated discs with that
back. I got an L6, 7, and 8 going running wild. I went out because I needed some kind of
fusion would help, but that's right.
Brett, expectation level is ridiculous.
Brett, yeah. With the Javon Walker kid, had he not gotten, would he have been good?
He would have been great. You know, he had a terrible injury. Came back, had some success, but he was never the same. Could have been great.
What about Mike Sherman versus Mike Holmgren? You play with him almost the same.
Yeah, both were really good coaches. I would give the edge to Mike Holmgren, who I said was the greatest coach I ever played for. And I'm speaking offensively, but he was a hard ass. People don't know that about him.
I think we could see it on the sidelines. A lot of times he was cussing you up and down.
I'll never forget one year I came home and my grandmother, God bless her soul, called her Meemaw. So she always would cook me breakfast every morning. So I'd go down to her trailer. She had a trailer by us. And I go sit in the trailer. We had a great relationship. We're sitting there talking about, she had dogs and cats. She had cats up in the cub. I'd go and get a bowl of cereal.
It'd be a kitty cat.
I'd open it and the cat would come out. But that's not the story.
You know, Mississippi stuff, you know.
Meemaw, you got a cat in the cabinet. Oh, yeah, that's Mimi.
Yeah,
Mimi. I'm like, okay.
Oh, my gosh.
But she says one day, that Holmgren seems like a nice fellow. And I said, well, he can be. But I didn't want to tell her that he could rip ass and it ripped mine numerous times. I had him pegged. So after a while, I'm one of those that kind of learns people's mannerisms and the little nuances that they
right.
When Mike Holmgren would come into the team meeting every morning and take his glasses off and put them on the podium, asses were going to get ripped.
But Favre, did he ever say, like, you know, I mean, on the, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of good games that you had, did he ever, like, would he attaboy you as well, though? Or was it always?
He was like my dad.
Like Irv.
Long on ripping ass and short on attaboy.
Hey, but you know what's crazy is how many head coaches came out of his staff.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I mean, it is absolutely unbelievable.
And then he came out of the Bill Walsh deal, so it just all right. Kind of, you know, that's kind of the way it is nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you remember, Brett, because you were there. I don't know, you probably don't remember, we had met in the locker room right when you got traded.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember.
I don't remember that, yeah.
You remember that? And yeah. It was off season, and but I remember Gruden was kind of like, and Bubba and I have talked about this before, yeah. He was like low man on the totem pole.
Yeah.
Do you remember he was literally cutting film for each position?
Yeah.
I mean, like when they used to,
he was a grinder.
He was a grinder.
Man, I really
was. It was cool to watch his whole career, right?
Yeah.
I know we can't really talk about it probably too much. I'm supposed to have him on the air one of these days, Tony, you know, with us, but I'm not going to go any further with it. But that guy got the raw deal. They really, they really just, you know, they cherry picked, you know, that really disappoints me in the league. It really does.
I think he's going to win his.
I think so too. I hope he wins all the money.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great coach. Great guy. He and I have a great relationship. I love him to death. Love him.
He was unfair.
What a hell of a coach too. Oh my God. Did he ever rip you a new? Did he rip you a new ass before?
No, not Gruden. Gruden, like Tony said, he's low man on the totem pole, and I mean it, the lowest man on.
For real, like no.
He was only a couple of years older than me.
Right.
Yeah, and he was at
Tony may be the same age.
He was at the facility probably 20 hours a day.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's when it was. I mean, think about even now how many players remember like that there was somebody actually cutting tape like. Film to, you know, for offensive line side angle and end zone angle, yeah. You know, tight and wide, all that. Yeah. I mean, you do that manually.
And I think of all the people in the world that's done that, he was the only one who loved it.
Right, right.
I met Dr. Diaco. Dr. Joe Diaco was a longtime coach here, longtime physician here at the Buccaneer. And he was the physician for when Chucky was the coach here, and I used to get on the air at like the time. Remember when Dungy came back from 40 and beat him, and we had a song called Chucky Was Tony's Bitch, and we would just, you know, just really raise hell with him and stuff. And so I'm on the radio.
How are you going to get him on the show?
No, we can't. We can. Cause we can. So I was on the air. I'm the Howard Stern of Tampa, kind of. And so we would have all these songs about, you know, when they would lose and things like that. Well, I never seen them. And I was at Dan Diaco, Coach Diaco's son's birthday party, and there's Gruden, and he finds out that I'm Bubba the Love Sponge, and I'm the guy on the radio that talks this shit, and he comes right up to me, and he goes, "So, are you that guy on the radio?" I go, "Yeah," and he goes, "I hear your smart ass stuff every once in a while. Not too good." And then just walked away. And I was like, man, I think I don't know if I'm welcomed here or not. But I really, really admire him. He's a great guy. And you know, Tony Dungy's a great guy too. We've had him in the studio.
We went in the Hall of Fame together.
Oh, right? Did you? Oh,
nice.
Just a class act. I mean, you can't say a bad thing.
Is Holmgren in the Hall of Fame?
No, but he should.
Him and Sterling. I mean,
yeah. That's too. To me, I mean, I can't believe that they're not in.
Two of the greatest Packers in our lifetime, you know.
Absolutely.
You know.
And then he was great at Seattle.
Yeah, not Cleveland, not so much. But nobody can fix Cleveland.
I mean, judge him on Cleveland.
No, you can't judge anybody on Cleveland. I mean, you know what?
True.
Anyway, listen, I know that you got to go out and do some more weed whacking and fertilizer and sprinkling and all that kind of stuff. But thank you. Hey, Brett, tell Tony how much fun we'll have if we get to go to Colorado. He's the holdup on the deal. I got it all done.
You'll learn to dance, Tony.
Oh, shit. I might leave a hamstring on.
Well, I didn't think about that. You're right. Maybe a Tuesday.
You're one of the high-profile guys that haven't been seen out there yet. Although, boy, he took one this week on this past weekend. I feel
bad. Well, you know, I mean, they've already exceeded. What'd they have? Zero wins?
One win last year.
What, 4-3 now?
Yeah, and if he wins two more, he's bowl eligible. And you know, every bowl that has attendance issues are gonna, you know, he'll have his pick of bowl. Yeah. You know, like the whatever bowl.
If he doesn't win another one, they're gonna make him bowl eligible.
I was gonna say five can be bowl eligible all of a sudden.
They'll make a new bowl.
You know what, Brad? I got, and it's pretty cool. In 2020, right in the middle of COVID, in June, Brady had just signed with the Bucks, and Dion calls me up and said him and Shador are going to be at this high school in Tampa, and with Brady. And so I got some videotape, and I got to watch Brady kind of giving Shador some instructional kind of deals, which was pretty cool. And then Tom Brady was throwing passes to Dion. So that was pretty cool too, and pretty surreal.
That is.
All right. Well, listen.
I do passes to Dion too.
Yeah. Hey, did you ever? When you were Atlanta, you know, second string, did you have to go first string against first string D and go against him?
Yeah, I never completed a pass except to him.
Right, I mean, to him.
I try to go after him every play.
Who was the starting quarterback in Atlanta then?
Chris Miller.
That's right.
Chris Miller. Yep. Then it was Jeff George, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah. After Dion went to San Fran or something, it ended up being Jeff George. That's a guy.
I played against Dion in college too, my freshman and sophomore year.
You beat him. You guys beat him.
Well, we beat him my junior year. He was gone, but Leroy Butler was still there.
Yeah, Leroy was good.
But at the first play of the game, my sophomore year in Tallahassee, I rolled to the left and throw one, hit Dion right smack in the middle of the numbers, and he goes untouched.
Did he do that clown? Did he do that Walter Payton stiff leg?
He's the best athlete I've ever seen in person.
Without question. Yeah. He and Bo Jackson.
I never got to watch Bo like in person, but Dion in person was the best I've ever seen. He like glided across the field.
Yeah, he made running look so easy.
Yep. Yeah,
and when he picked 6-2, man, he'd tell you about it, wouldn't he?
when he was with Dallas and Green Bay, it's kind of like running out a fly ball in Major League Baseball. You know they're going to catch it, but you got to run it out. I mean, you don't have to, but you got to
attempt to head that direction.
So when he picks it off, there's no way I'm going to catch it. I have the angle, but there's no way. But Holmgren's going to rip my ass if I don't run after him. So I run. At about the 5-yard line, he slows up. and baits me. Now, I know I'm not going to get him. He knows I'm not going to get him.
But you got to make it look good.
Right when I get close, he hops across the goal line. I'm like, Deion, really?
Why'd you make me run that far?
Shit.
Oh, listen. Hey, he called you Country Time. Did he not? Country Time?
Yeah, Country Time.
So, Brett Favre, our guest today, and thank you so very much, Brett. And
thanks, man. And it was great to see you.
You too.
And as things sort out for you, and when you win, and when you can talk about stuff or not talk about stuff or just talk about football, whatever. Love to have you again,
I'll
my
come
friend.
Come back on, and we'll have a blast.
We'll have awesome. We'll turn the stones over or whatever.
Yeah, but exactly.
hey, Brett, we certainly really, really appreciate you going on our Past
Thank
Packers
you.
Podcast.
Great talking with you both.
And
we'll do it again.
Yeah, we will. And yes. And hopefully you're all healed up from your hip and your back and all that kind of stuff. And we'll be victorious when we talk to you again next time, my friend.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Thank you. Right, thank you so much, Brett.
We'll see you, man.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Be good.
Thank you, guys.